This is Gulf Coast Life. I'm Mike Conniry. Thanks for joining us. In May of 2023, we talked on this show with three of the founding members of a brand new nonpartisan nonprofit called Floridians for Democracy. It was created in response to what the founding members said were rising autocratic trends in Florida government. One of them was Jim Nathan. He was retired after spending more than three decades as president and CEO of Lee Health. He and his wife Karen were the initial catalyst for the group. Another was a Florida Gulf Coast University student named Caitlin Telgren. And the third was 97-year-old World War II veteran and lifelong writer and educator Dr. Bob Hilliard. Since founding, Floridians for Democracy has grown to nearly 3,000 members in Florida and beyond, and they've held many online events and have reached out across the political spectrum to provide educational programs, including some that feature traditionally conservative attorneys and leaders who share their concerns. With the third National No Kings Day protests coming up this Saturday, we invited two of the founding members back on the show for an update on the work they're doing and to get their take on what's unfolded over the past 3 years. We spoke yesterday. Let's hear that now. Jim Nathan is co-founder of Floridians for Democracy. Welcome back to the show, Jim.
Thank you, Mike. We're honored to be here.
And in studio, I'm joined by Dr. Mike Martin. He's president emeritus of Florida Gulf Coast University and a founding member of Floridians for Democracy. Welcome back to the show, Dr. Martin.
Well, delighted to be here. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Jim, I went back and listened to the show that we did with you all in May of 2023 when you first announced Floridians for Democracy. It was you and Bob Hilliard and an FGCU student named Caitlin Telgren. You were all primarily focused on what was happening here in Florida at the beginning, right?
Was our initial incentive because we were seeing things. This was before there was a Project 2025, and we were seeing things happening in Florida that were giving us great concern. Now we understand that Florida already had the map for Project 2025 and was already implementing.
I've heard you describe it as Florida being the canary in the coal mine.
Sadly, we may be on life support at this point in Florida, and the rest of the nation is now the canary in the coal mine.
How closely do your current efforts align with what you all set out to do 3 years ago? Have there been any fundamental changes, or is it still the same mission?
I think the mission in general is very, very much exactly the same. It got broadened because so much of what's happening in Florida is happening across the country. There's almost like a competition between Florida and some of the other states as to who can be the most cruel and most destructive of traditional American 250-year-old democracy.
Dr. Martin, you were there right at the beginning. When Jim and Karen came to you, were you immediately on board? Did you feel like you were seeing the things they were describing?
Absolutely. And I think those of us who gathered first all felt that way. And, you know, we all had, who knew Jim and Karen well, had faith that they were also committed, so it was worth committing to. And so I don't think anyone has hesitated. I think the group that started out, obviously, is much larger now. We've been able to expand, but come to the same sets of conclusions, which is democracy's under assault. And if we don't stand up and do something about it, we will regret it for generations to come.
When I did have you, Jim, on the show in 2023, I asked you if you had people telling you that you were being hyperbolic or that you said the sky was falling, and you said you did back then. Has that diminished any in the intervening 3 years?
Wish I could say that it's gone away and that everybody's bought into that reality, but we certainly have met more and more people along the journey. And it's been a great education to meet people that are thrilled to find out that they're not alone in this journey, but we still have a long way to go to find those individuals that are not pleased with the direction of this nation. And certainly over the last year, there's been a lot more things happening that should have people become aware that we have a serious challenge, not just in Florida, but for our nation and the impact that it has around the entire world.
How many members do you have now?
We're just under 3,000. We have some from out of state, but we have almost 3,000 followers now.
Early on, I know that you primarily had members who were members of the Democratic Party, and you said back then that you were hoping to get some non-party affiliate people and some Republican people. Has that occurred over the 3 years?
We have not done a recent survey, but actually a year in, we did a survey that showed us that we had 21% who were not Democrats, that were either Republican or independent or NPAs in Florida. And that was a great thrill for us. We think that number is probably even higher than 21% now, because over the last year, we made a conscious effort to reach across the full political spectrum. And we've had programs, we've done two with the Cato Institute, an organization that I never dreamed we'd be doing partnerships with. But they too, as conservative and as libertarian as they are fearful that the freedoms that this nation has fought for from day one are eroding at a rapid pace. So that's broadened our impact. We've had programs with some really impressive, very traditional, well-known conservative attorneys and other leaders that have brought more people to the table with us, and that we've been able to forge relationships both nationally as well as in Florida with pro-democracy organizations.
Have you had any people join you who were self-described MAGA members, or whatever the correct term is, who have decided to remove themselves from that movement?
I don't know of anyone that specifically said you converted or we converted them or they were converted. But we do know that there are individuals that probably a year ago or 2 years ago would never have even recognized that we existed.
Well, let's talk about some of the things that have occurred in recent years that you would characterize as autocratic. What tops your list, Jim?
Well, the attacks on the rule of law and attacks on our Constitution, the cruelty of the detention centers, and this whole issue that we're going to go after the worst of the worst and get rid of them, while we've seen that the vast majority are individuals that have not had any kind of major criminal impacts and are just being swept off the streets. The fear that we saw emerging over 3 years ago has now become very much the reality.
Dr. Martin, you live at least part-time in Minneapolis, mm-hmm. Minnesota.
Yes, indeed.
Which we saw a lot of on the news. Were you there during any of that?
For part of it, yeah. And we followed it as well through a lot of friends and my kids. I think, you know, my kids are Korean, and my daughter works downtown St. Paul from the suburbs. And she was literally, if not frightened, certainly concerned about simply going into work and not looking like you are necessarily a local. And we jokingly said you should carry your passport. I don't know that she did, but we thought about it. But unquestionably, you felt the movement. And in some respects, these things are happening, as Jim suggested, people get on board. I think in Minneapolis, and that whole response was a case where people who were concerned saw other concerned people come out and participate. And even in Minnesota, when you can get thousands of people show up at 7 below 0 to make a statement about the world we live in, it's pretty serious. And so we're proud of that.
You've been around for a long time, Dr. Martin, and that is not a judgment on your age, but you have. You've been around a long time. You've been in a lot of different situations in different parts of the country. Could you ever have imagined the kinds of things that we've been seeing unfolding, the purging of the civil service, the whole DOGE thing, the cuts, and so much of it happening without any kind of proper channels or congressional oversight?
Well, that's exactly how I felt. I felt amazed in the negative sense, right? Well, look at the assault on voting rights. And if there's anything more fundamental to democracy than encouraging people to vote. And yet, I think much of what's going on is an attempt to make it very difficult for people who might disagree with the current ideology to come out and cast their vote. And you're right. It's been a really disheartening reality to observe. And I think any of us who are grandparents think about what is this world going to be for that generation. I think my kids will manage, but I worry about my grandkids and other people's grandkids. It has been stunning, and stunning in a very negative way. And that's why I think Jim and I and others, at least from what little or even small things we can do to move the dial back, we're going to give it our best shot.
It's not much longer in our lives, longer ago in our lives, that any of these kinds of things happening in this country, in any other country, we would have read with interest and said, thank goodness that's not going on here in this country. And now we are being seen by people all around the world for our horrendous treatment, both internally and externally. The humanity of what we thought was the American humanity is now really cruel and inhumanity. I often tell people that say, well, you know, this is all sort of blown up overreaction. And I often say to them, you wouldn't allow someone in your organization for a half of a millisecond to work and treat people, talk to people, demean people in the way it's now become societal, accepted in our society, and that we see our leaders. And I teach at Florida Gulf Coast. I'm in my ninth year now, Mike. And the students, this is what they've been exposed to. They're 20 years old. What have they been exposed to in their life? And they're seeing this. And I feel like instead of a culture of caring, we've created a culture of swearing. And it's just, I don't know, we would have thought this was just a third world country doing this, and we're doing it right here to our own people.
I know another thing that you guys focus on, Jim, is the state level oversight taking control away from local jurisdictions. Can you break that down a little bit for listeners so they understand what I mean by that?
Well, it's interesting that the party that said less government has actually created more government and more government controls. Early on, I reached out to leaders in a few counties where I had longtime working relationships, former legislators, and I said, no matter what your party is, no matter your feelings, wouldn't it make sense for you to look at what's happening, that the issues of being able to make local decisions and have local control are being grabbed away from you? Wouldn't you want to speak out about that at least, even if the other things you might think, well, maybe that's okay? But I got no response. And this is continues to move on now where the whole issue of, well, let's eliminate sales taxes and property taxes. Well, we didn't hear a whole lot of outcry from, they may do it behind the scenes, but there wasn't a whole lot of outcry from counties and cities about what does that mean for us? And that people should be concerned.
And I would note, Mike, 25 years ago, I was a senior VP at Florida. And then Governor Jeb Bush led a reform in the governance of universities, giving every university their own board, with the understanding that every university should be governed and respond to the needs of the region they serve. But we've drifted right back to the old Board of Regents with the Board of Governors with a one-size-fits-all. So it's happened even at a university level that the original plan for which was to create exactly like local governments do, a locally driven, locally sensitive, locally responsive, and locally accountable institution in their neighborhood is now driven out of sort of a singular ideology coming out of Tallahassee.
DEI legislation is something we've seen several variations on here in Florida, and it is impacting not only, you know, K-12 education, but it's impacting things in the university system. As a longtime educator and administrator and president, what are your thoughts on that?
I wrote an op-ed in the local papers quite a while ago about DEI, in which I argued that DEI was essential in many respects to this region, which you have as one of the most elderly regions in the country. This is the fourth oldest state, and this is the oldest part of the oldest state. And as a result, you have a very low workforce participation rate. Nationally, it's about 63%. In Florida, it's about 58%. In Southwest Florida, it's 51%. DEI invites all those people into the process and into education so they can be part of a growing rather than shrinking workforce. So I said, if you don't believe in anything else, believe in math. And this is not woke. This is simply math. And so DEI, to me, was a way of saying to those who had not otherwise been fully invited to the party of higher education, you're invited. We want you here for your sake and for the rest of our sakes. So I think it's been, I think we got caught up in this as a straw person for the purposes of political agendas without stopping to ask, what will it mean pragmatically in the long run? And I fear that the demographic cliff, or whatever you want to call it, is out there looming to do real long-term harm to this region and ultimately to the state of Florida and ultimately to the nation when we fail to recognize that underrepresented people in our society need to feel as though they are represented and are invited to participate in the larger scheme of things.
I'd like
an additional aspect on that, if I may, Mike. As Mike Martin was approaching his retirement from FGCU, and I had just made my decision of retirement from Lee Health, one of the projects we embarked upon was called Southwest Florida Voices for Racial Justice. And it was done before the George Floyd murder. And we got started, one of our initial founders was Audria Anderson, a former FGCU and state of Florida educational leader, and the wife, the widow of the first Black judge. Now we have none in Lee County, the first Black judge. And our focus was to really figure out how to bring a multicultural society together. And we got off to a phenomenal start. And then after the George Floyd murder, it started to grow even more rapidly until slap in the face, the anti-DEI, the anti-critical race theory. But I really believe this was a fear on behalf of whites that were in power positions that this multicultural society was going to gobble up their power. And it was so fast, so strong, so instantaneous, not just in Florida, but across the nation, that it's become really damaging. And I'll close that portion by saying that when you're telling people that we're not allowed to talk about real history, true American history, the good, the bad, and the really ugly, but you're just supposed to make it like everything's wonderful and everybody's loved everybody, and even slaves gained skills because of 400 years in slavery. They were being trained for whatever. This is sick, sad, and wrong.
I'd like to take a moment to reintroduce my guests. Jim Nathan is co-founder of Floridians for Democracy. They're a nonpartisan nonprofit founded in 2023. Dr. Mike Martin is president emeritus of Florida Gulf Coast University and a founding member of Floridians for Democracy. We're going to get an update on the work they've been doing and their outlook on the times we're in. If you'd like to engage with the show about this topic, find us on our social media. We are WGCU Public Media on Instagram and Facebook. Let's talk some about health issues and vaccines in particular. Jim, you recently hosted the kickoff for a national program called Grandparents for Vaccines. What can you tell us about that aspect of this story?
Well, I was already involved in a startup of an organization that's still getting its feet on the ground that is focused on overcoming this anti-science, anti-education, anti-medicine movement that has been going on through the MAGA movement. So we were already zeroing in that vaccine mandates or the lack of mandates was going to be a problem. Then concurrent with that came the physician leadership in the state of Florida speaking out against vaccines and that everybody should have their right to make a decision. But we have a lot of things where we have to be subservient to societal rights as opposed to individual rights in order to have an effective society. So we were zeroing in on that. And then we learned about an organization being started out of Ohio by a pediatrician that had just gone into retirement, who was afraid that white coats and stethoscopes no longer have the cachet that they used to have in terms of people respecting the clinical knowledge that they had spent their lives training for. So he started this concept of Grandparents for Vaccines, and we had the luxury and honor and opportunity to host the very first program. And Mike Martin was one of the presenters on it, sharing his story of his personal battles with polio and the impacts on his family that he and his entire family faced. But we had a number of vignettes of individuals sharing that. And I also wrote guest editorials as well as communications to our state legislators. Fortunately, the most draconian of the anti-vax bills this session did not pass. But part of that was just the battle between, I believe, between the Speaker of the House and the governor over other issues. And this was a big issue for the governor and the Surgeon General. That was the word I was trying to say before. So we were really thrilled and honored to meet Dr. Lavin. And that organization, which just started at the beginning of September, now is in over 41 states, I believe, and is growing rapidly. And their whole focus is to have old people like Mike Martin and Jim Nathan sharing their memories of life before vaccines, the impacts on their families, and the fact that these vaccines have actually saved millions and millions of lives in this nation. And now we have the potential of bringing them back. And I'll close with this, that in our own backyard in Collier County, we see a measles epidemic occurring right there. And we should be concerned about this anti-vax.
Dr. Martin, we don't have a lot of time, but I know that you had polio as a child, correct?
I did. I was 5 years old, 1952, spent 4.5 months in a rehab hospital in Minneapolis, Minnesota, 160 miles away from my family. My dad worked in the mines in northern Minnesota. My memories are still a little vague on some things and very poignant in others. It was quite a time. It was hard on my family. My parents were very young. They were 20 and 17 years older than me, and not, I would argue, very sophisticated. And this was one of the most frightening things they ever faced. I didn't note it at that time. But I'll say this, when I came out the other end of it and got conscious enough of the world we live in, I said, Jonas Salk may be the greatest scientist ever, because he prevented a whole bunch of other kids from having to have what I had, which is to be in a ward of 40 other kids between the ages of about 3 and 9 for long periods of time to go through physical therapy. So I saw it up close and personal. And as Jim suggested, I thought back about how frightened the entire family was, because no one knew where it came from. There was no one in my town, little town, that was contracted it. And I was the one who was sort of the poster child for being sent off to Minneapolis. So it's a personal thing as well as one that's driven by science. I also believe in the science of this. And we're seeing those who have decided to deny the science imposing some costs on the rest of society that we are only now beginning to sense and feel.
It was 1955. I just looked it up when the polio vaccine.
Yep,
vaccine
it came out three. And then Albert Sabin followed with the oral vaccine. But 55 was Jonas Salk. But he was testing back as early as 53. But I was contracted in 52. And my kids were asking, did you miss kindergarten? I said, well, this is how old I was. I am. There was no kindergarten in our town. So the benefit was I didn't miss anything. But at the same time, you know, when you're 5 years old and you're separated from your family and the only time you saw them was on weekends, it gets to be pretty frightening because you wonder if there's an end to this. Fortunately, I came out largely unscathed. And we were the great beneficiaries, just to know, at that time, March of Dimes was the big funding mechanism for helping people offset the cost. 4.5 months in the hospital, our family bill was $36. So,
Jim, we're coming up toward the end, but I want to give you a chance to highlight some of your upcoming events. First of all, this coming Saturday will be the I think, third or at least the next No Kings Day. Are you guys involved with that or in some way facilitating?
Absolutely. It's number 3 nationally for No Kings, and they're certainly hoping to get way over the 7 million that were out for No Kings number 2. And there are, just in Lee County alone, there are 10 different locations where people will be out. And so all over Florida, all over the nation, there will be programs. And today there was an announcement about an organization that is all Republican leaders that feel that they're losing what they thought was the Republican Party, that are speaking out in support of the No Kings Day. They're taking out ads all across the country and in many different locations in Florida. So that's pretty exciting to see that that direction. We'll be doing an update on April the 7th for the bills that passed in Tallahassee and those that didn't pass. On April the 14th, we have Amy Keith, who's the Florida Common Cause leader, speaking about the mid-decade redistricting effort and the special session possibly for April, that'll start on April the 20th. We've got postcarding events, phone banking, emails. We've got a big event on April the 11th that we'll be doing. So a lot going on. Wonderful Howard Simon, the former ACLU Florida executive director, has been giving presentations and writing guest editorials. He did one recently in Naples called There's No Giving Up on Democracy. There's a lot going on. We had a wonderful donation of $25,000 match that just this past week got matched, so we can help keep up the funding and support other organizations with our with the many efforts coming up. So we're not bored. Wish we could go out of business today and feel that and this has never been about us or thinking that Floridians for Democracy as an entity was going to accomplish all of this. We're just one of the many butterflies flapping our wings and hoping that at some point we will come to our senses and get back to building a loving, caring, multicultural society.
Dr. Martin, I'm going to give you the last word.
Oh, well, I just second what Jim said. Jim and Karen and others have worked really hard to make sure we continue to have activities and educational opportunities. And I will simply say this, at the fundamental commitment of Floridians for Democracy is to encourage people to become informed and participate in the process. If we can do that, I believe good outcomes will follow. So, you know, sort of turn off the talking heads, think for yourself, take some time to do some research, come to a conclusion about what you want from your government and your society, and step up and participate.
Dr. Mike Martin is Florida Gulf Coast University President Emeritus and a founding member of Floridians for Democracy. Always a pleasure, Dr. Martin.
Thank you, Mike.
And Jim Nathan is co-founder of Floridians for Democracy. Thank you for your time as well, Jim.
Thank you so much. We're honored.